I met him at an internet startup meetup in 1998. 26 years ago.
Hi guys, today we have here with us our CEO of Investments, Robbie Young. Hi Robbie.
Hi.
How are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you.
Can you quickly introduce yourself and tell us a little bit of what you do at Anamoca Brands?
Sure. So my name is Robbie Young. I'm the CEO of Investments and I oversee our investing activity. As you know, we have sort of three pillars in the business. We make games, our core business. We make investments and we have services. And so the investments piece is the one that I focus on. And that's where we make investments both strategically off the balance sheet as well as through our venture fund, Anamoca Ventures, and our private equity fund, Anamoca Capital. And we make investments across the Web3 ecosystem. So not just in games, our core business, but also in infrastructure and DeFi and art and all kinds of different things across Web3, because mainly it's our belief as a company that, you know, tokens are kind of the incarnation of network effects. And so the best way to attract those network effects is to invest broadly across the ecosystem.
Has Anamoca Brands always been in Web3?
No. So we actually started out as a mobile free-to-play game company back in 2009. So we made games that was just after the launch of the App Store on iOS, and then later the Google Play Store launched, I think, 2011, 2012. And we made mobile free-to-play games, mostly casual games. And as you can tell from the name of the business, we focused on brands. So we focused on creating games leveraging third-party IP. So we would license original IP from brands you all know, everything from Hello Kitty to Doraemon and, you know, et cetera, Astro Boy, Ultraman, and we would make original games featuring those IPs.
So what excites you the most about Web3 games?
What excites me the most?
To
be honest, it's the same thing that's always excited me. When we started out in this field, the thing that we found most interesting was this intersection of blockchain and games is all about digital ownership. And the idea that, you know, we made games for years and we always promised to consumers that they owned the stuff that we sold them in games. They would spend virtual currency, they would buy virtual items, but actually they didn't really own it. They were only renting it because those economies we made in those games were not real. And so when we discovered blockchain, that's why we thought that this was a really exciting moment, because it was actually an opportunity for us to deliver on that promise. We could give them true digital ownership of their stuff because it was permanently, you know, existent on the blockchain. And so this was a chance for us to really fulfill that promise. So to be honest, it sounds old because it's, you know, it's a six-year-old idea, but it's still what excites me, because it's this idea of delivering digital property rights to gamers, which I think, if you think about the fact that gamers spend $100 billion a year buying virtual stuff in games that they don't really own, imagine if we can actually skins, lands, avatars, swords, everything. Like, if we can actually give them that stuff and give them real ownership of that stuff, that's, you know, tremendous.
I have to ask, do you have a favorite type of game?
So I'm very boring because I'm a middle-aged guy. And so I play the kind of games that middle-aged guys play, which is, I actually like to play puzzle games, to be honest.
Oh, nice. So yes. Any chess.
That would be one of them.
So you don't have a favorite game then, do you?
No, I think, okay. Well, and also when you are involved in the game business, it's hard to play favorites because you're going to upset somebody.
That's fair. It's like naming a favorite child.
It is.
So what do you think is a crucial component in making an interesting game?
The thing about games is obviously they have to be fun. They have to be engaging. They have to be hard. I think one of those sort of adages we always have about making games is they need to be easy to play but hard to master. So there needs to be a sort of curve of engagement where it's very easy to get in and to have fun quickly so that you try it out. Because the hardest thing for us as game makers is to figure out how we can engage consumers and keep them interested to play more and play more. Exactly. And we don't want to turn them off right away, because if the game's too hard right out of the box, then, you know, only a very small percentage of people will stick with it because there's so much learning to do. But if you can give them small, quick, you know, milestones that they can achieve, then they'll be like, oh, this is interesting. I'll take the time now to learn more about it, to learn about the history of the characters and how the game works.
So if someone was starting out in Web3, mm-hmm. and you were to recommend a beginner-friendly Web3 game for them to play, what would you recommend?
Ooh, that's very hard. I would recommend actually they start with something on mobile probably, because if they go to the mobile app store, it's a relatively straightforward onboarding experience for them, and they can use an existing platform and infrastructure that they're accustomed to. So there's lots of games on mobile, whether it's through the usual sort of Google and Apple app stores or Telegram games these days, which are obviously very, very popular at the moment.
Tell us about Telegram games.
So I think Telegram games are really exciting because Telegram represents kind of a new platform for games. I think a lot of people know of Telegram as a messenger platform, but not so much for content. And in fact, we've been making content there for a long time because we have a studio called Gamey that makes Telegram games. And so we really understand this platform. And I think the best analogy to what's happening in Telegram games at the moment is if we look at what's happened actually in China with WeChat, where WeChat is one of the most popular distribution channels for people to play games on. And I think Telegram is following a similar trajectory, but with different markets around the world, where lots of people on Telegram now are playing mini games built inside of Telegram. And the ones built inside of Telegram have the benefit of leveraging Telegram's huge distribution footprint. So that's really exciting. And for us in the Web3 industry, there's a big overlap because Telegram happens to be a very popular medium for our industry and the Web3 community and people who are interested in Web3 to communicate. So it's the perfect place to sort of overlap that Web3 community and people who love games.
Right. Would you say that Telegram and Ton is making interoperability in games a reality?
Yes. Yes. I would say that because the main thing about what's happening in Telegram right now is it's very much embracing game makers to incorporate Web3 functionality inside their games. Whereas when you launch as a game maker, if you launch a mobile game on the Play Store or the iOS Store, you have to actually cut lots and lots of features because there are many things that they don't allow you to do. There's more things that they don't allow you to do than they allow you to do. And it makes it very hard to have a rich, feature-rich game that really shows off the benefits of Web3. Whereas in Telegram, frankly, they're very open to lots of different things. And so it allows you to really create a game that shows all the things Web3 can do.
That's amazing. So much to be excited about.
Yes.
As an entrepreneur, what's a piece of advice you would give to yourself, to your younger self?
My younger self. That's really hard. Because the problem is that the best way to learn, I find, is to make mistakes. And so often you want to give yourself advice to avoid the mistakes, but then you wouldn't learn. So it's kind of a catch-22. I think when thinking of starting a business, it's not easy by any stretch. I think one of the big things that's mistakes I made early on was the first business I started by myself as a sole founder, we call it these days. And I wouldn't recommend that. I would say always find partners, co-founders to start a business together with you, because it's going to be hard and you're going to find you hit lots of obstacles. You're going to run out of money. You're going to, like, there are so many stresses. And it's much easier when you have smart, dedicated people who have a similar incentive to make things work out as you do, to help you solve those problems. And just the benefit of having one or two other people around who share the burdens together with you, I think makes all the difference.
What would be a quality that you look for in a co-founder, someone that you're to walk through this entrepreneurial journey with together?
Passion.
Passion.
That's it. Because when you have that passion and dedication for kind of a shared vision, you know, like you both believe in digital property rights, for example. So you have that shared vision, that's what you want to do, you want to deliver those digital property rights, then you both share that goal and you'll work those extra hours or you'll grind extra hard because you believe in that goal and you share that vision. So I think it's about the passion, because from that passion flows everything else.
How has the Web3 space grown since you first started?
We didn't start at the beginning of crypto, because of course blockchain and Bitcoin and all that stuff came around, you know, almost 10 years before, well, yeah, 10 years before we entered the space. But we entered the space at the point at which it kind of became Web3, let's say. So when blockchain became enabled to be used for content and for things like smart contracts, and when Ethereum started to really become a thing, because when we entered the space, that was the moment at which essentially the NFT was invented. And so the NFT gave rise to us being able to actually create content. And so that was about 6 years ago now. Since then, the space has grown dramatically. I think we were kind of the flavor of the moment within the global tech industry during the period of 2021 and 2022. And that attracted a huge amount of capital to the space, which was great to fuel lots of new businesses. And so since then, the ecosystem has grown dramatically.
And where do you see the Web3 space going in 5 years' time?
For those of us here now, I think it's that you have to have that conviction that everything is going in the right direction. And I'm quite sure that we are going to see things in 5 years that we could not possibly imagine today. Just like when we see the dramatic changes and shifts in the kind of technologies that are being deployed by AI at the moment, where every 3 months you see some dramatic new development. I think in the blockchain space, it's less about that, because actually what we're doing is much more systemic. It's not about the bells and whistles of new technologies in Web3 on a daily basis. It's more about how we can slowly convert the existing infrastructure of the internet to be blockchain enabled, to be Web3 friendly, so that it's not just us in our small section of the game industry that have digital property rights, it's everybody on the internet.
So do you think that in 5 years' time, with all that Web3 mass adoption, will truly be achieved?
I think we'll be quite far along. I don't know about truly achieved. And I say that having looked at like the adoption curves of kind of Web1 to Web2. And if we saw where we were in the late 90s, when lots of people started to go online, and it became obvious that there were some use cases for websites and being on the internet. Still, we only had, in 1998, we had 250 million people on the internet. It was still a very small percentage of the world. And then what happened was mobile started 10 years later, and that basically put the other two-thirds of the world that was not online, because it allowed everybody to access the internet. And so I think, if you look at that, it's a 10-year cycle, probably, and I think we're going to see the same thing in Web3. I'd say in 5 years, we'll be halfway there, but maybe not all the way. And a big component of it will be how Apple and Google choose to embrace or not Web3 in their platforms, since they are, the primary gatekeepers to mobile distribution.
That's a very interesting point. One final thing, what's one piece of advice you would give someone who is starting out in their Web3 journey, who's brand new to this space?
I would say just jump in, honestly. And the best way to jump into it, if it's an area where you think you may want to work, is to be a consumer first. So go out and, try games, get involved in DeFi, get active on Discord in communities and Telegram chats and on crypto Twitter, and because you can be a part of the community without devoting your career to it. And so at least you can get a flavor of what the industry is like, what the kind of products there are out there, where you think the opportunities may lie, because maybe you have some idea that you don't see anybody doing and you think that the world needs this idea. So I'd say go and be a good consumer first.
That's great. Thank you so much for your time today, Robbie.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you.